Barnaby is the premier podcast spotlighting people of color. Every week, we talk news, what we've been playing, and tell you who's invited to the cookout. Our show is all about talking about gaming through a prism of blackness because we are the culture. Welcome to Bricago, y'all.
Yo, what up, what up, what up, everybody on the Spawn On Me podcast tip. Yo, what the deal be? I hope you're all doing well. Hope you're having a fantastic day, fantastic weekend, and hope you're having a fantastic July, as the kids would say back at home. It's a really, really good time here on Spawn On Me, and having a really great week, to say the least, is what is happening here in Bricago. Very excited to be talking to you all today because we have a really good, really fun a couple of interviews that we're going to have on our show this week. Something that came up really last minute on in terms of getting folks together, but it was really cool to be able to kind of see everybody jump on and be excited and be ready to rock with us here in Bricago. So that means a ton of good information, great information for all of you at home, and making sure that everybody here is just having a blast. You know, my wife just came back from a really dope European vacation. You know, she ran and was in Iceland, was hanging out, checking out all the waterfalls and all that goodness there. So I was home gaming my face off for most of the week. It was pretty great to be able to have some time to just like really be a sloppy mess in the house and not care about my life and about any of those things. So it was kind of great to be able to do all that stuff. But it was a really good week for the video game space, and I think for our show specifically. I think we had some really good breakthroughs in terms of numbers this week on some of the previous episodes. Then we had some really good information pop in through a lot of different channels and a lot of different folks, which was awesome and fantastic as well. And I think, again, this week we have two banger interviews on this episode, and we're going to talk a little bit about Exoprimal 2 in the back end of the show for what we've been playing this week. So I'm gonna not do a lot of talking this week. It's gonna just be a lot of chat and a lot of conversations coming up in our first interview that we're gonna have for this episode of Spawn On Me. And also, before we jump right into that, I have to say, oh crap, we're almost at 500 episodes. That is wild. We're trying to get there. We'll be there very, very soon. First interview popping up today is going to be from our friend The Hadou, who is the general manager, coming to us from EVO. We had a great conversation with him about the future of what EVO is going to be, the kind of current state of the fighting game community, and how they're looking forward to this kind of big influx of numbers in the space that's really going to be a huge deal for a lot of new players and a lot of folks who are going to be coming into the space for the first time. So without further ado, I want to bring you our amazing interview with our friend Rick The Hadou, coming to us all the way from EVO. And here we go. Everybody here in Bricago, we have a very special interview. Someone that I've been dying to get on the show to talk about one of my favorite things in the world, which is the fighting game scene and, of course, EVO. Rick The Hadou, what are you doing? What's good? How's everything, fam? How is everything going?
You know, today is chaotic. We put our numbers out this morning so that people could be enthused about this being very much the largest Evolution Championship Series event of all time. So I'm doing great and stressed.
I can only imagine. I know from going from, you know, running Combo Breaker to now running it and kind of making EVO the biggest and best that it can be, I am sure that there's a smidgen of worry in there and some stress that goes along with that. But having gone to my first EVO last year and seeing just how beautiful everything was, I know that everything is in perfectly good hands. So I'm excited to see what EVO Deuce for me is going to be when we wind up going. So I'm excited for all of that to happen very, very soon. Less than a month away from one of the biggest shows on the planet for the fighting game scene. How are you feeling about everything that's happened this year? Like everything that's happened this year from a fighting game community perspective has felt like it's jumped in magnitude because of the games that have dropped or the games that are coming this year and how all of that is going to kind of incorporate itself into, you know, Evo this year. How are you feeling about kind of the state of the space right now in terms of where it's at?
I think we're at an incredibly interesting inflection point.
Yeah.
We've got new games coming in. We have new players coming in. We have this post-COVID online environment where people are really hungry and really excited to actually get back together to compete, not just sit at home and do so. And all of that is happening at the same time that we have a new Street Fighter, that we have a new Tekken that's been announced, that we have Guilty Gear doing the best it has ever done and still rolling through new DLC and new curves. SNK's got multiple games out and multiple games in the works that we've heard about. Like, it is a truly excellent time to be a fighting game fan.
It is. It feels like this is the wildest year I have seen in all of the time that I've been following and been a part of the scene as a kind of, you know, on the periphery as a person who played in the shadows and was like, you know, I'm gonna try to beat some people's asses while I can online, but never really got a chance to go to many locals even when I was back home in New York. Now it just feels like so many people have come to the space who are brand new. What has it been like seeing that kind of usher in of all these, this kind of big influx of new folks come into the space? Has it been something where, you know, you're seeing a lot of them, you know, really kind of put both feet into the pie or in the pool, not in the pie, into the pool? If you're putting feet in the pie, that's some whole other stuff. I don't even know what the kind of freakiness y'all into. But are you seeing a lot of those folks like really just jump into the space and really get that welcome? Or does it feel like folks are still kind of trying to figure it out for themselves while everything is kind of happening around them?
I think we're largely seeing that welcome. We have tons of players that are coming in. We've got tons of new people coming in trying to figure out what this is about, what it feels like to kind of be part of the community, part of the culture. And the best thing about right now, between the online events, between the online organizers, between all the different places that you can find your people online, your little subset of the community, I think the chance of finding where you feel at home, whether it's a specific game or whether it is a Discord dedicated to a specific character, there is so much of that now. And even a decade ago, when I think the last kind of boom occurred, we didn't have a lot of those resources and tools. So the ability to kind of help people get from, I'm curious about fighting games, to maybe I'm good at fighting games, or better yet, I love fighting games, feels like a much faster path than at any other point when I've been here.
Yeah, I'll even exclude Street Fighter VI in this part of the conversation, but it has even felt like even folks who I didn't know, it feels like everyone's coming out of the fighting game closet in an interesting way, right? It's like folks who didn't necessarily play or you didn't know if they played are now kind of saying, oh no, I've been playing for a while and also I'm decent at X game or with X character and that kind of stuff. It does feel like we're in a kind of renaissance of the space in a really cool way. I think the question I have for you is, you know, you've been in the TO kind of arena for a long period of time now, being the GM of Evo. Or what are you even hearing from folks in that circle? How has that changed for them too in terms of the growth of the space?
I think for organizers I talk to, whether it's the guy who's working on my local all the way through to peers like Alex Jabaley down in Florida, we get into situations where the expectations on what an event should be is higher than it's ever been. But for a lot of them, what we're seeing is the number of people that want to dive in and kind of help a local organizer or help a regional organizer or help an international organizer put on a show that lives up to their aspirations is also a wider pool than ever. When the numbers for Evo this year really started kicking off a few months ago, our internal staff sat around and went, oh. And the first thing that happened was the team that heads up our volunteer pool went, we'll never have enough volunteers. This won't work. Oh no. And it wasn't too much longer after that where the sheer number of people that were attending the show started coming into clarity. And the amount of people in that massive player base that reached out or filled out the form and was like, I want to help make sure this works. I want this to be good for me, but I want to make it the best it can be for everybody else that's attending. There's never been more applicants. Like, man. And that's all the way down the line. I'm seeing that at locals. I'm seeing that across the country. I saw that over in Tokyo just a few months ago now.
Yeah.
It's a great, great time to be invested.
It's I'm happy to hear you say that, because I, like I shared, I went to my first Evo last year, and you know, I had all these expectations going in, and it's, I'm also in a weird bubble because I'm going in as press, so it's like, you know, you get to do some stuff that's a little bit different than kind of normal folks who are just going to attend it. But the thing that I came away with, having watched the show for so many years, was just that sentiment that you shared, was just like how hands on and on deck so many folks are, because they've built these relationships and these friendships over decades now, and seeing each other grow. And everything I hear now on every stream that I'm watching, when I'm watching everything from, you know, Spooky to Yipes, everybody's just talking about like not only the experiences that they've had there, but like, oh yeah, that other person who used to play, now he had a kid, so he can't play right now. He's doing this kind of stuff. It's like all of that family layer of it has really come across in that way. From the OG's perspective, and you being a part of that kind of growth period, how has it been to kind of just see the space continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger every year?
It continues to be cool. It continues to have a lot of what I think are transition points that are interesting and awkward. Like, you call out OGs, and I get looped into that now because 2009 was well over a decade ago.
Right.
In my head, I'm like, the OGs are at Riot right now working on a game, because that's right. What Tom and Tony Cannon are.
Right.
Alex Valle is sitting around and working on his stuff, and that's where the OGs are. And it's really cool watching that happen, though, because you wind up going to shows, and that knowledge base and that experience base, it does trickle down and through. And the greatest part about fighting games for me is most people who have that knowledge are interested in somebody else possessing it. They actually want to make sure that this is a generational fandom, that this is a culture that lives on past their involvement in it. And I love being part of that.
Yeah, it's so cool to see. Like, I was just a fly on the wall of so many different conversations when going through stuff. I think one of the people I sought out really early was Katana Prime, because I'm just a big fan of his work, and we were chopping it up about random stuff. And then Sonic Fox will just walk past, and I'm like, oh crap, that's Sonic Fox. Like, it's, and everybody's like, yo, what's up? And it's such an interesting kind of space for where it doesn't feel like there are walls between any of those competitors in that way, because everybody's fighting for the same thing. I do want to go into that conversation about how big this Evo is. I was blown away by the number of entrants, and this is the biggest Evo ever in terms of the amount of combatants and folks who are going to be in this particular showcase of the best fighting talent on the planet. Almost 9,200 people are going to be playing across the 8 games this year. How wild is that to say that number outside and just know that you're going to be at the helm of a lot of this?
I think one of the most time passes, life is daunting and interesting sort of moments today is just looking at the numbers and going, when I went to some of the first big tournaments that I went to, the goal was to fill a 128 player bracket. And that was considered a challenging goal. You weren't going to catch that too often. And then that has continued to scale year over year, every year since. But Evo this year, the smallest bracket is multiple times larger than that.
Yeah.
And when we get to the largest bracket with Street Fighter, you have to not only add a zero, you're then timesing that by 7. And it is so cool to know that many people want to play. But it's also interesting to think about the event as an event at that point.
Yeah.
Because when you look at Street Fighter 6 this year, there will be more people that go 0-2 on Friday and then need something to do than the entirety of the attendance of the first Evo I went to.
Yeah. That's a lot to cut. Well, again, a lot to think about for you and the team especially. But like, I never thought about it that way of like, you know, I went into my first MK bracket I competed last year, and I ran the full gamut. I won one, I lost one, and I got DQ'd because I needed to go talk to somebody during a press thing. So I was like trying to run back to my game, and I was like, nah, you got here late, fam. You got DQ'd. I was like, shit. But thinking about what that means for the rest of your weekend is really important. And there was also a really great announcement that came up about what you're going to be doing with Crunchyroll this year. That's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be in the mix too. But when you're thinking about that too, like, what does that conversation look like for for the full experience too of like, you know, this is not like a Comic-Con in the way that like you go to Artist Alley and then you go do this and stuff. Like there, of course there are side games and side stuff that you do in that respect, but like how are y'all thinking about the full entertainment factor, especially because because Evo is in Vegas too, so like I'm sure that there's lots of surrounding things within that space. What are your thoughts about how you all kind of try to keep people in a good spot that they have something to do throughout the whole weekend?
So it's really important to me that Evo stays rooted in being a tournament. And that's where it came from. That's what fighting games are rooted in for me and for so many other people. But we're at a scale now where being a tournament convention is a intentional combination of words. Like that's on purpose. And when you go to a convention, there are expectations at a convention. There's an artist alley. Evo has an artist alley. There is either music to engage with or vendors to engage with or exhibitors that are trying to show off either product or new experiences. And all of those things need to be at Evo now too. But the thing that we're trying to hold as firmly to as we can is everything that's Evo should be either about fighting games or tangential to fighting games. There needs to be a straight line between that brand being there and that experience. So when you look at the show this year, Red Bull will be on the show floor again. Red Bull's been involved in fighting games now for a long time. We just saw Red Bull Kumite recently. So they'll be putting an experience together for people at the show to engage with them that is still rooted in fighting games. You have Crunchyroll coming, and they're coming with DJ performances and anime activities, and we've got anime fighting games. They've got Street Fighter Duel there because Crunchyroll Games is actually the group getting that out into the States for the first time. Those things have to then relate back. That artist alley we talked about is curated so that the artisans that are in it, everybody is fighting game related. That's what they're putting out is that expression. And then the big thing for Evo that I think is going to start kind of setting it apart both from what it used to be and other conventions in the space is just like at Evo Tokyo, the publishers that are involved with fighting games are at Evo. So when you come to the show, you can expect to catch Capcom on site. You can expect to catch Bandai Namco on site. We know that Arc System Works will be there again and has in the past shown up with very interesting things to show off or experiences to take part of. And all of that gets wrapped together and down to, it's also somewhere where you can show up and buy a Heihachi Mishima shirt. And I can't pick that up at my local mall. Yeah. So that to me is where you get the convention side next to the tournament side. And then focus that all in so that by the time you get to Sunday, by the time you get to even Saturday morning at this point with the scale of the show, you've got those finals to watch. And so you can start, show up, compete, fill some time with fighting game related activities, close the show back on something that's competition.
Yeah. And it's great because the way that things were set up last year, and I'm sure the configuration will be a little bit different this year, is just like I love the feel of being in the pit. Right, where it is that feeling, right? Like, and that's such a great thing, and I applaud y'all for keeping that a part of the process, because it is that thing that you'll be sitting and watching a thing, and you'll hear an earshot, somebody pop off, or you hear something happen, and you'll get this muttering and this murmuring of like, yo, what just happened? Oh, such and such just lost to such and such. It's how do you continue to kind of build that that mythos into what this show continues to be and continues to grow with, not only just, you know, the vibes of what it is from a classic perspective, from what we already have known, to kind of spicing that up with other layers of what you want it to be?
So I think the cool thing is that vibe and that mythos builds itself. Like, we can talk about all these kinds of things where we try to organize a stage over here, or this part of the pit's over here, or the pit's going to be next to the convention instead of intermingled. And all of those things are what they are. But the thing that drives them forward is just the players that show up and want to compete. And regardless of the scale of the event, regardless of prize pools, regardless of stage presentations, regardless of some of the cool photography that comes out of it, what you're talking about is just there are enough people here that want to play fighting games that are aware of other people who play fighting games and the storylines built into that awareness that often doesn't come from Evo. You're getting that through social media and Discords and tuning into Team Spooky and ICFC and something that Ryan Hart tweeted 8 years ago. Those memories kind of come together in that moment to create an opportunity for that vibe. But if all of that doesn't already pre-exist, being at Evo is not suddenly going to generate it on its own. Evo is going to give it scale. It's going to give it prestige. It's going to create a lot of opportunities for that to happen back to back to back to back when there's that many people present. But the root of it, that comes from you.
Mm. Yeah, it is very organic in the best ways, which I think was the thing that I took away from my first time going to the show. Because again, like, I had wild expectations, but then all of those expectations were amplified by 10 because of just all the small things that you would see of just like Tasty Steve being Tasty Steve, like, you know, like all those things, like all those energies that just are well known at this point. And it was really great to see so many new folks come to the table too. Like, we had, I think Sharpie was doing stuff over at Multiverses. There was other stuff that was happening. It was like so many people who I knew in the space who were like, oh my God, you're here. This is great to see so many folks there. I do want to talk about going back to the numbers of the show this year in terms of entrance for stuff.
Yeah.
One, the thing that is, again, blown me away is just like, I'm looking at the numbers now, 7,061 entrants for Street Fighter VI. One of the biggest conversations that I have tried to kind of get a good temperature for over the past couple of years is that we've seen this ebb and flow of the FGC. And we've seen lots of things happen within the space over the past decade that have been these kinds of leaps and bounds where we were hoping to see the FGC get to the heights that we'd seen in things like we've seen in League of Legends or the Dota scene in terms of their heights in terms of the visual experience that you wind up getting. And I remember very specific, like ESPN, I forgot which one it was showing FGC fights for a while. And it was like, oh my God, we're getting there. We're going to get to the space that the FGC is going to get the due that it is deservingly trying to get. Do you think that a game like Street Fighter VI is going to elevate this art form into some new space that we might not have seen before? Because again, we just got, you know, MK1 dropping soon, Tekken coming in, but seeing this many people come here with Capcom throwing real big bucks at it this year, do you feel like that combination is going to put everybody else and raise the rest of the ships in a way that we hadn't seen before?
I mean, I think we're seeing it raise the ships already. Mm. When you look at the attendance base for EVO this year, for every other game there, something like almost half the people that are playing any other game are also trying out Street Fighter, which means that the breadth of fighting game players are centralizing for a moment in time. And that centralization is going to drive new competitiveness. It's going to drive new friendships. It's going to drive new rivalries. Those things are going to produce stories that, with EVO at its current scale, with some of the other people in the market, with you popping up to do an interview here today, we're finding that there is what I think is a renewed opportunity for all eyes to be on fighting games. And all eyes means a ton of chances for talent, skill, timing, pick whatever combination of things that you personally lean into.
Yeah.
And that will drive us forward. Do I know that it's going to drive us forward to being the international? Don't know. But I also don't think there's any purpose in driving towards that end goal. Because the community that it's coming from is very different, has always operated differently, wants different things. Now, that's not set aside. Everybody wants more visibility, more money, more time. Mm-hmm. Those are the table stakes. Let's just assume that's there. Mm-hmm. But you look at fighting games, and it comes from this tournament convention culture globally. You can go anywhere in the world and find a fighting game event that's trying to be a tournament plus fandom stuff to do plus rallying point for that fandom to exist as often as finances allow.
Yeah.
You don't always find that in all the other genres, which isn't to say that they're not doing great things or interesting things, but I think it's lots less about chasing what exists now as a reference point versus chasing what fighting games can be and letting that mature and discover what that actually is. And just try your best not to waste resources and awareness opportunities while getting to that new horizon.
I love the way that you talked about that, because that is it kind of satiates my need to not be as frustrated as I have been over the past couple of years, because I felt like the FGC wasn't getting its due. Not even from a just like talent per talent perspective, but from a this is a game that is the easiest analog to understand visually kind of space. Like, got two people, you understand one person has to beat the other person. You don't need all these. I mean, there's multitudes of meta understandings and techniques and strategies that go along between the minutia of that fight. But from a spectator sport perspective, it is extremely easy to understand what is happening when you see it. And I've been like, why hasn't this been able to catch fire in the ways that I had hoped, while all these other kind of complicated in a different way games have been able to kind of coalesce and find that space. It's been interesting.
I think some of that is definitely just letting it mature into what it can be on its own, and then finding the right opportunities to drive forward into whatever that next thing is. You've been able to understand MMA since you were 2 years old.
Right.
MMA, although had a fan base, had a popularity, wasn't the internationally approached sport that it is now prior to what UFC compelled it to be. You look at territory wrestling. That wasn't what it was until the opportunities around the WWE made it into a new thing, and actually has made it into a big enough new thing that offshoots of that new thing are turning into gigantic things on their own.
Yep, yep.
And it's actually one of my favorite contrasts right now between AEW and WWE.
These are two
extremely, extremely valuable companies right now, mm-hmm. making extremely good product that is related, but very
mm-hmm.
different.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting games are kind of at that point. That's why I was talking about an inflection point earlier. We don't know exactly where it's going to go. We have a bunch of reference points for things it could be, but what we're going to find out is what it's supposed to be.
Mm.
And if all the right ingredients are in the mix, I think it could be bigger than what we're thinking it could be. And if it can't, maybe it can be more interesting and more stable for the fan base truly invested in it. Pepsi fans often will tell you that sometimes they want to be Coke. And then behind all of them is the crew that really likes RC Cola.
True.
I can still find RC Cola a whole lot of places. It's not as loud, it's not as vibrant, but it's a pretty stable product.
I love that analogy. If you like Starry, though, you need help. I'm just saying that out loud. If you like Starry, I don't know. That's a little suspect. No, just play. I'm not. Please, Starry fans, don't come for me.
Sprite.
Yeah, I don't want Starry fans coming after me and trying to fight me in the streets. That'll be bad. One of the other layers of this, I think, has been really interesting looking at the numbers and digging into those was, you know, a recent report came out a couple days ago from the folks who are doing a lot of work in the game preservation space about how we've lost a lot of games and we will continue to lose a lot of them. Almost like 87% of the games that we used to be able to play, we're not able to play. But seeing Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 have a bit, like, is the number 4 game in terms of entrance come back so strong. I just want to hear some thoughts from you about what does that mean for like that level of the space, and, you know, what does it mean to have a what we call a legacy game continue to have such long legs in the community?
I think the coolest part about fighting games is at this point is truly generational. You have franchises that release new titles every year. You have, what are we on, 32nd Madden at the moment? I don't remember where we're at. Right. And fighting games exist as frequently as a lot of those titles. But because every time they come out, some mechanics change, some character designs change, some just battle systems changes. Whatever language you just learned, you have to learn a new dialect for.
Mm.
And that helps keep that passion moving forward, because you always have something that you can say, I know how to speak English, I can figure out this variation of English, or find a translator. But the cool part for me is all the people that get invested in the legacy game don't go away.
Mm.
And they stay learning and experiencing the genre through other games that they're still competing in, and often pull people back to whatever their cornerstone is for their fandom. It's why it's 2023 and you can still go over to Japan and watch thousands of people play Third Strike and Cooperation Cup. You can find people that are flying to Ohio to play Vampire Savior, and hundreds of them are doing that at a time. We're still playing Super Turbo because those cornerstones of fandom don't dissipate. They don't disappear. Became a Picard fan last week. Star Trek and Kirk are still waiting for you. I don't know which streaming service it is right now, but they're waiting for you. And so when you wind up with something like Marvel that's so beloved And then Marvel winds up with someone like Tong and Kevin Ha, who then also have someone who has kind of scale of influence like Maximilian. You wind up with places that, yes, that fandom's ebbing and flowing, but you can always spike it back up. Mm. And if it spikes back up and catches enough new and interested people and catches enough new opportunities, and it's not the version I think that normally is promoted, but there's a lot of credit that goes to the Parsec people for coming up with a way for people to play Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 at home across the country. The game wasn't designed for that originally. That wasn't the era. All those things work collectively to get to a point where I can go pitch something like the Maximilian Twitch Rivals event that had Marvel. And to our incredible surprise, that got approved. And so that creates pathways for something like this throwback tournament to happen. But all the enthusiasm between those points, all the consistency of TNS's Marvel tournaments, rally that fandom, churn it up into something larger. And then now we have an actual cultural international rally point around the Evo tournament this year. Turn up and show out, because everybody gets to celebrate for a minute. And so everybody is.
Yeah.
That's the coolest thing about those legacy games to me. That's the coolest thing about why we're doing those throwback tournaments, because I think more than just Marvel can do this.
It feels like as games kind of tail off too, that then you do have some of that kind of appreciation for games that have been in the space and have really kind of had that long tail. So it does make me wonder which games will 5 years from now be that version of UMVC in that way. We're almost out of time, and I wish I could just keep you for an hour, because there's a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. But I got two last questions for you. One would be for the newbie, for the Evo newbie, as I was last year. What's one of the first things that you want them to kind of be able to do? Like, if you were to give someone advice about a good way to kind of approach your first Evo, what would it be?
There are so many different ways to tackle that question. So I'm going to go with the most practical one.
Yeah.
Go into the venue, walk around, figure out where your tournament pit is, figure out where your convention activities are, figure out where the water is.
Yes.
You're in a desert. Keep yourself hydrated. But then figure out where the casuals are and go play casuals. Mm. The tournament's important. It's your first event. You can be Arslan Ash showing up at his first Evo Japan and winning the whole thing. That's possible. I don't know. Or it can be somebody where you sit down and realize, like me at my first tournament, that you might not be as good as you think you are yet. And either way, the ability to play games at the show with all the other people that are at the show is not an opportunity that's going to happen at home. I think the biggest waste that can happen at the show is not finding someone else to play games with. Even if you came with a huge group of people you play with all the time, it is very different than sitting down with someone who might not even speak your language and discovering that play style and that opportunity to learn about the game, that opportunity to learn about who you are as a player, what you value when you're playing, because the experience of playing in a tournament or even playing in casual with people you don't know is different than playing with your friends at home.
You know what? I had another question, but that answer was so good that I'm not even going to ask it. That was the perfect way to end our time here with Rick. Again, I am just blown away by all the hard work that you put into the space. I still rock my... people give me a crap because I'm from New York and I rock my favorite Combo Breaker jacket because it has the Shackle flag on it. You're like, you're not repping New York. I was like, yo, this jacket is fire. Y'all bugging. But again, the ability to kind of see this, continue to make it as big as you possibly can, and continue to figure out good ways to elevate the craft in all the ways that you and your team does. Massive bravos to you and props to you and your team, because I know this is not an easy thing to do. The work of a person doing this work is usually very selfless and thankless. But it has been great to see you get your flowers in the ways that you have over the past couple of years, knowing how hard you work and knowing that you put on a powerlifting event when you were working at Twitch Rivals, which was amazingly cool to see. It's just like an interesting thing. It was like in the ways that you have been working and thinking about how all of this work can be. So, for folks who are getting excited about Evo, is there any kind of links you want to share or any info that you want to share for the folks who are need to go and not only potentially show up, but watch things at home?
So the biggest thing is hit up evo.gg, particularly this Friday, which I just realized I don't know when this airs, so it might be last Friday. The site's going to have the information you need. It's where you can pick up tickets. It's where you can find out the schedule. It's where you can get the master list of the vendors. It's where you can find out who the exhibitors are. It's where you can even see what games are in that 10,000 square foot arcade we've been promoting. We're trying to make sure that that site is a hub for all the resources to actually engage with and enjoy the show. Beyond that, you can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram. I'm pretty confident you can find us on Threads now. That's new. Mm-hmm. Check it out. Definitely. Really looking forward to seeing everybody that comes. And if we don't see you this year, next year.
Yeah. I hope to be able to say what's up, give you the what's up, because I know you're going to be running around like a madman during the whole show. But Rick, thank you so much for being with me here on Spawn On Me. Thank you so much for all the work you do. Everybody in FGC, again, this is the preeminent, the biggest tournament on the planet, and is going to be ridiculously cool. So I hope to see you there and hope to be able to get some games in with everybody else. And don't bother me too bad when we get on the sticks. I'm old and I have carpal tunnel. Don't fight me. Anyway, Rick, thank you so much for spending some time. And everybody at home, we're going to go to a break, but we'll see you right after this. Hey everybody, Khalif here from the Spawn On Me podcast. Hey, we have been in the market for new PCs for a long time, and for our 10th year anniversary, the wonderful folks from NZXT have partnered with us in a collab to be our hardware sponsors. So, if you are looking for a new PC to stream or to game in the best way possible, go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmebld, and you'll be able to find a perfect PC for you, whether that be the Player 1 machine, Player 2 machine, or Player 3 machine. The ones that we're rocking for our new studio build, they have everything you possibly could need for the best PC experience on the planet. Remember to go check out nzxt.co/spawnonmebld, and it will get you set up right. Much love and peace. Yo, welcome back to Spawn On Me. What a fantastic conversation with Rick the Hadou, general manager over at Evo, to come through and talk to us about this being the biggest Evo ever. It is literally going to be the biggest one that has ever happened in the planet in terms of how many people are going to be in the trenches trying to get their belt, trying to get their Evo statue and win the biggest fighting game tournament on the planet. It is a amazingly cool, really dope kind of space to be able to occupy and to be able to see be real in the ways that we have. And Rick was just brilliant and amazing. It was so cool to be able to finally get a chance to talk to him about, you know, what Evo has become. And I'm just so hyped to be able to go again this year, sit in the front, take all those pictures and get all that good energy in my body. Just very, very excited about that. We have another interview for this episode that is going to be a fun one as well. I think this one is cool because if you didn't hear the information, Xbox just put out or is at least launching this new feature. Right now, it's only with Xbox ambassadors and folks who are, you know, using that branch of the testing servers that they have. But they're putting out this really interesting new feature that's all about player safety. And this one is now called the Xbox Voice Reporting Tool. So that information got dropped on the Xbox blog. I reached out to the Xbox team and said, hey, I'm already starting to see some conversations around what this is supposed to be. And there's some fears out there about, you know, what this is going to wind up being for players and how is this going to kind of actually impact them in a much bigger way. Can we get someone to come onto the show and talk about this who's actually worked on it or who's been there, so to give us all the real deal information for you at home so that you're not, you know, hearing all this, you know, misinformation out in the world? And we had the amazing Dave McCarthy come by and come hang out with us. He's the CVP of Xbox Player Services, and we had a really dope interview about what the program is. I'm sorry, what the features of this piece of software are going to wind up being. What is this features list going to wind up be? And to give you a little bit more information about exactly how it's going to work. So let's check out our interview with Dave McCarthy, CVP of Xbox Player Services, and we'll be right back after that. What's good, everybody in Chicago? What's the deal? We have a fantastic guest and someone that I'm really excited to talk to because a new feature is about to come out really soon on the Xbox platform, and we have just the perfect person to talk about it. We have Dave McCarthy, CVP of Xbox Player Services, to talk about the Xbox Voice Reporting feature that should be coming to your consoles very, very soon. Dave, thank you so much for taking some time and spending some time with me this morning.
Thanks for having me, Khalif. Really excited to be here and excited to talk about this new feature on Xbox.
So I as a person who has been cussed out many, many times in many, many, versions of lobbies and everything else, am really excited for this feature. Because, you know, a thing that we have talked about on our show for numerous years has just been, you know, the toxicity in the space has been wild, and we're hoping to see, you know, platforms kind of really come to the forefront and find good tools for us to be able to kind of make the spaces better. I would love to hear your thoughts about, you know, how this kind of feature came to be and what were some of the, you know, early conversations that the team were having when you decided to kind of make this happen.
Yeah, happy to share. It's, you know, as with a lot of our features, there's kind of an array of factors that come together to bring something to life. This one was heavily informed by the community, for sure.
Yeah.
We do a lot of sort of benchmarking studies with our Xbox Live audience to understand the experience of the player community. And one thing we consistently saw in our polling of the community and conversations with them was this fact that when it came to voice communications, and in particular in-game chat, which is where you often encounter people you don't know, the occurrence of toxicity was way higher than any of us would like it to be. And, you know, some people start to do things like they shut off from the community and they don't get involved in things. And that's exactly opposite to the spirit of what we're trying to do on Xbox and make Xbox a place where everyone can have fun. So that kind of, you know, was a bit of a wake up call for us. We also knew sort of feature wise that we were fairly, just to be honest, exposed with a gap there on the evidence side of things. We have great evidence capture on things like text chat, images, and the like, but we didn't have something for voice. And it was really important for the team to have something there that helped us when a player did report to kind of reinforce that. And so it was kind of that combo of player feedback and data combined with, you know, our own awareness that we had a bit of gap in our evidence capture that led to this feature coming to life.
Yeah, I appreciate that because I think one of the biggest, you know, pain points for players was that ability to say, well, this thing happened to me and maybe no one else captured it. Maybe I'm not a streamer and I'm not playing online. I'm not doing it on Twitch so I can be, but I have that instant, you know, like, hey, everybody, this is exactly what happened to me. So it's really cool to hear that this is, you know, going to be a part of that kind of bigger thought process for online safety on the Xbox platform. One of the reasons why I wanted to snag you to come onto the show today was instantly when this went up on the Xbox Wire and on the Xbox blog, you know, I'm watching social media and I'm looking at the conversations happening around it, and I'm already seeing a wild amount of misinformation happen about, like, so what is this supposed to be and how are they going to capture stuff and are they going to do it this way and what is it going to do? It's the reason I brought you on to be able to say, like, Dave, tell them all the ways that this actually works so that they'll know and it will kind of dismiss some of the misinformation. So give me the quick kind of, you know, summary of the process of how a person would kind of go through this.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's some really sort of careful design implementation here to deal, quite frankly, with a lot of concerns that our ambassadors had. Our ambassadors are one of our audiences we use in the early design phase for a lot of our features, and they give us some great feedback on requirements for this. So first of all, important not to interrupt your gameplay flow. So it's press of a button to make sure that you actually can record what you just heard or saw in an in-game chat session, and your gameplay isn't interrupted. In fact, you can just go back to that sample after your gameplay session is over, so it's not going to interrupt your flow of play, which is a very important thing for all of us, of course. It's based loosely, actually, on the same technology we use for game clip capture. Oh. So there's a buffer running in the background. We're essentially capable, should the player initiate the command, to capture a 60-second video and audio buffer. This works on Xbox consoles, our current generation, so the Series S and X, and Xbox One as well. It works across any game that uses in-game chat. It sort of auto records only when you as a user decide to initiate the capture. So there's no storage on our side. In fact, there's no upload to us until you as a player decide that you actually want to upload the clip. Because sometimes, let's be honest, in the heat of the moment, maybe, you know, something rubs you the wrong way, but you think about it afterwards and you're like, you know what? I was given as good as I was getting, and maybe I don't want to report for whatever reason. So you actually have up to 24 hours to decide whether you want to upload a clip. We give you a couple reminders along the way just in case you forget. Hey, do you remember you recorded this sample? Did you want to report it? You have 24 hours to do so. As the clock ticks down, we give you a couple other reminders. And then if you don't act on it, it actually just auto-deletes. So you as a player don't have to do anything, which I like. Obviously, we're all diligent around our storage on our consoles. You can record up to 20 clips in a 24-hour period if you want to. I think there's a 2-gigabyte limit, if I remember correctly, on that in a 24-hour period, and you can upload all of those if you want, sort of thing. When you upload it, so just to set the record straight, that's when it comes our way on the Xbox side. So we don't have any access to it on your console locally. The console manages everything in terms of encryption and auto-deletion and all that stuff, and it's only when you decide to initiate upload of the clip. That's when it comes our way, and it goes directly into a moderator flow for review, which happens then on our side, and then we try and give a decision. We'll actually close the loop with you on our decision either way, so it doesn't go into the great void, and you're wondering, hey, Xbox, what the heck happened with my report, sort of thing. So that was another piece of feedback we got, is close the loop with us. That was really, really important.
Yeah.
And then there's a auto deletion logic on our side as well. So if we end up enforcing on a certain clip, we will retain that. I think it's up to 366 days on our side is our storage policy. Mm-hmm. And then if there's no action taken on something, it's a 90-day storage. And they're all audited and auto-deleted, so your clips don't sit with us beyond that time. It also respects all of your privacy settings. So if you make a data deletion request on our privacy dashboard, that's included in stuff as well. Obviously, if something's in the middle of moderation, it's in the middle of moderation, so sure, it won't get deleted. So don't try that trick. but no, in all seriousness, you know, managing our data and having control over our privacy is really important as well. So we honor all that stuff. The clips can't be shared with anybody else. They can't be edited. So they are very, very locked down and specifically generated for this purpose of moderation. So hopefully that's helpful to dispel. I don't actually know what's floating out there in terms of rumors, but that's the way the system operates.
The biggest kind of red flags I saw from a like misinformation layer of it from what was shared in the blog was more around like, are they going to be capturing my player chat speech in my party chat speech, and I was like, that's not in there. That's not what's in the conversation there. So again, thank you for the clarification and all of that. But that was one of the major things that I was like, that's not what this says. So what do y'all, where'd you get that from? I mean, I get it from a privacy perspective. The conversation, as we all know, around technology now is like everything is listening to you all the time kind of stuff. So people are automatically kind of freaking out about that initial layer when they hear something like, oh, you're capturing my voice in some form or fashion. I guess another kind of wrinkle to that I wanted to bug you about. So like when you're uploading those things and you're saying, all right, so here's an incident that happened, and you know, it kind of connects in the same ways that your other captures do. Does any of that stuff touch your OneDrive at all? Like, is that a thing that like hits the OneDrive layer of it? So because that's another part of the thing that people are like, well, and again, I think this is like such a weird edge case where people are like, we can tamper it. You can mess with the file and then send it back up. Just to clarify, it's not touching any of those layers of the capture process.
None of that. You're all locked down on the console, and it's all through initiation on your side, and nobody can touch it.
That's great. I love to hear that. The other part of this that I'm excited about is the, you know, it came up in the blog around like the way that you're going to eventually be able to get some data about what we're going to see from the folks who have been using this, you know, how this is kind of being, you know, felt and understood from the community, especially from the Xbox ambassador layer of it. How excited are you to kind of like finally, once this kind of gets rolling? Because one of the biggest issues around capturing this kind of data is like a lot of folks don't self-report, and it's just hard to capture that data from an analytics standpoint. How excited are you to kind of like at some point, once this is kind of moving, to be able to have some like real hard data numbers to be able to say, well, like we've been able to reduce this on our platform and whatever that number may potentially be?
Sure. You know, there's a lot of aspects along those lines that I want to call out. I mean, we're on a long journey here. I moved into this particular role with our player services about, 8 years ago now. And the amount of surfaces that people were interacting on and the type of communication and interaction players could have with one another was a heck of a lot more simple back then than it is now. And I think that's awesome in the sense of us connecting around the joy of gaming and with each other and all of the social benefits that brings. But it also does present some very real challenges. And so I think having evidence capture in this space where we've had a gap for a while is a real win for us. I'm excited that we've got something already established like our transparency report. I'm really proud of the position the team takes in sharing our data with the community. I think if you're going to build trust in the community, you better be prepared to share your data and what's going on and the good and the bad, because let's be honest, like communities, online communities are hard to manage. Newsflash, society can be a bit of a mess. and trying to make sure that we interact in the spirit of those community standards, like it's an ongoing journey. It's never perfect. And I love that we have that data out there in our transparency report to share what's going on. So you can expect, obviously, in the next update we do, because we've already done two reports, we'll get our initial view of the data on voice reporting. I should note, just in case people missed it in the blog, we're starting with Xbox Insider Rings, and it's in English-speaking markets to start on console, so the US, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, Ireland, and the UK. I believe are the initial markets. We're looking at additional language coverage, additional markets there. So that, again, that's part of our philosophy in this is like, we don't assume we get it perfect in iteration one. And part of this is just gaining feedback from our community, hearing what works and doesn't work, quite frankly, testing our moderation flows as well, because this is new reporting content coming in and making sure the pipes all flow the way they're supposed to flow, and we can get back to you in due time on things and close that loop. So I don't want to assume we've kind of got it perfectly there, but we'll be using that insider ring to do it. It's just a really exciting time for us. I'm really proud of the team. I will tell, as much as our players care about the health of the community, I can't tell you how much the people inside the walls of Xbox care about the standards of that community. You know, they game every day and night on it. They want everybody to feel welcome. It's part of our Gaming for Everyone philosophy. Something when I came into this role, we kicked off again about 7 years ago, sort of thing, to drive product inclusion and make sure all players felt welcome on the service. And this is just another cool step in that journey, but it's a journey we know is never done for us.
Yeah, and it is. I feel like, you know, you all have been walking the walk for a long time. And, you know, those same messages have come down from Phil and folks I, you know, specifically know, like Katie Joe and the rest of those folks on those teams, to be able to talk about what this is going to be for the future. Not just this, but like the overall arching. Everyone should be able to come here to play and feel safe when they do it. So this feels like an extension of all of those layers of conversation that have been happening for a long period of time. And I'm also really excited to hear that you're kind of deepening that relationship with the Xbox Ambassador crew, because I feel like that's also been it's going to be a really interesting data point for all of you, from the, like, you know, in-group speech, from out-group speech conversations that'll probably pop up from there too, that'll give us a much broader you know, a perspective about, like, what does moderation look like when you're talking to your friends versus you're talking to a random person, a stranger? What are those kinds of, you know, how do we get better as a gaming industry about learning what those kind of cultural touch points are and be able to moderate effectively across some of those things? So it's exciting to hear that y'all are doing this work and kind of, you know, really putting your feet into the sand and kind of making this happen. That's really cool to see that that's going to be a thing.
Totally. And this group is like, ambassadors are 150,000 strong. We have representation around the globe. We're making sure it is truly representative of all aspects of our audience. So it's just it's a gift for us, honestly. We're really lucky to have our ambassadors. They're highly, highly engaged. The other thing I'll call out that I really like about the implementation of this is, because we've covered in-game chat and because of the solution we've used on kind of the console buffer and the streaming capabilities there, this works automatically for thousands of games across Xbox console without an ounce of developer support required. And I think as an industry, finding solutions that are lightweight for all of our game developers and publishers to support their communities, pretty cool that we're able to. It even works actually for Xbox 360 back compat games. So yeah, so I'm really proud of the implementation here, because it's very scalable as well, which, if we're going to be realistic about healthy communities, we got to make sure that all of those games and all of those scenarios are actually covered.
I appreciate the fact that you talked about that, because I was literally about to ask you about that a little bit, because I think one of the other conversations that have been popping up in, you know, circles that I've run in the DI circles that I run in, and, you know, a lot of the work that I've been able to do over the years has been about how do you share the technology, right? How do you figure out good ways to be able to get everyone better across the board? And hearing that this is a very low lift for the folks who are going to be doing that. And I assume, because this is going to be a part of the ecosystem and the platform, that even when you're pulling in folks who are going to be new devs, like something through the ID at Xbox program, they probably will have some kind of connection to be able to use some of these tools too, to kind of like automatically have that within the games that they're making too. Would I be correct in that assumption?
You would absolutely be correct. And those are capabilities that otherwise would be really hard for smaller developers and games to actually get to. It's kind of cool, because we've got, I mean, obviously this is more what I call kind of a reactive reporting tool. Yeah. So meaning, you know, the content, in this case, a voice sample, happens in real time, and then you record it. But we're also investing heavily in parallel in a lot of sort of proactive filtering. So people might recall about a year and a half ago, we were able to acquire an awesome team and company called Two Hat. They make a product called Community Sift that is used in the background to run real-time filtering on text conversations. Again, user initiated and player initiated. Yeah. In terms of wanting certain filters on their content. We were on a bunch of image detection on things just to try and get content filtered out and not popping up before it happens even, right? So voice, a little bit of a different space. People actually got to say something real time and then we got to record it. But believe it or not, some of this proactive technology is actually used in the back end, just to give people a little inside baseball. We use, once you decide to upload that sample, we'll actually use some of our tools to scan it for our moderators to help optimize them reviewing it as fast as they can and get to you as fast as they can with their responses as well. So it's all kind of a puzzle that fits together for us in a way that we're really excited about how that investment is growing for us and making the community a safer and more welcoming place to be.
That's rad. I know we're almost running out of time, but I want to, you know, I think, and I want to give you again some kudos, you and the rest of the team for doing this. I think this is a thing that has been sorely needed in the space. You know, our communities that I represent all the time, from the underrepresented, you know, parts of those layers, have been looking for stuff like this for a long period of time, and it feels like Xbox again is kind of, you know, future facing and future looking about what this is going to be for, you know, some of the layers that we wind up seeing. A quick question for you too, like that I just thought about, because you know I love playing on my PC through a lot of the Xbox apps that I have there, or the Xbox game app out there. Do you know if that stuff is going to potentially kind of move in that direction at all at some point in the future, or is it too early to kind of see? This is the first kind of, you know, first step in that respect.
I mean, I think with our tool set, we have to be everywhere that our players are. So we're starting on console here.
Okay.
No specifics to announce at this point in time. But my belief is wherever people play, we got to try and extend our capabilities. And there shouldn't be areas where people feel that we're not providing that capability and offering things. But we got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And console was definitely the logical place for us to start.
Yeah, totally makes the most sense there. Again, it's a closed ecosystem. You'll be able to kind of get those things together in a much better way. And also, totally. Before we let you go, massive shout out to all of those moderators, because this is not going to be easy with the amount of Xboxes. And now here you can go way back even to the Xbox, you know, what is it, Xbox One or Xbox 360 era of games and stuff, to be able to do some of this work. Matt, give those folks some coffee and some donuts, because they're going to be in the trenches for a long time with all the stuff that's in the space. Dave, thank you so much for spending some time with me this morning. Again, if there's any last bit of information or things you want to share about the feature, I'll give you a couple of seconds to kind of just, you know, let that fly.
Yeah, I mean, I just encourage all of our players watching or listening to the podcast here, try it out. Give us feedback. Get in an insider ring. We want to hear from you. And then the other thing I'll say, Khalif, like, be an ally. This is not just for you being on the receiving end of things. If you see something that isn't directed at you and you hear something and it's not right and it doesn't sit with you and it's not the type of community that you want to game in, be an ally for others. You can report as an ally. It doesn't have to be directed to you. Mm. And I think that's another awesome aspect of this feature, is us all looking out for each other and just having the gaming space that all of us want, man. You know, let's not let the fringes shape a community in a way we don't want it to. We're going to take our community here and uphold those values together.
Oh, man, that's just the perfect way to end our conversation, because that is such a big conversation within so many communities that care, of feeling hopeless about, oh, man, I just heard this thing and I don't know if that person said anything, or, you know, we were in a room of silence when something came up that was really gross that somebody said and nobody said anything. Right. It is that moment where we can actually kind of make the space a little bit better and do it and be proactive in that way. Man, that was so great. Thank you, Dave. I really do appreciate your time. And again, I'm pulling for you and the team. I think this is going to be a thing that I will be, you know, jumping in. I'm on the insider layer of the funnel too. So it'll be fun to kind of check this out, mess around with it and see how we can actually kind of, you know, make our spaces better. So Dave, thank you again for the time.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for the conversation, my friend. Keep up the great work on this podcast. I've been listening to it. And thanks for having me. It's a big deal for us to be able to share the information here and touch base with our community through you.
Hey, we got to set the record straight. I can't see stuff. I'm trying to be an ally too. I'm like, I'm seeing stuff and I'm like, what the heck is this conversation? This has nothing to do with what this is about. This doesn't make any sense. So thank you again. And thank you so much for listening. Everybody at home, we're going to have more Spawn on Me right after this. We'll be right back in a second. Yo, we are here with What's the 411. We're going to talk a little news, but before we do that, massive shout out to our friend Dave McCarthy for giving us the skinny on everything that's happening with the Xbox reporting feature. Again, I think that that was amazingly cool and really great for them to snag him to be able to come on and talk about everything that's happening with that feature on our show. One of the first folks to be able to get that conversation out into the world. So please make sure you're sharing that information and passing that around to everyone in the spaces that needed to hear that for the conversation at large. So, you know, if you listen to last episode, we talked a lot about the FTC versus Xbox. A lot of that has gotten fixed and finished at this point. The FTC has backed down. The CMA is now going to back down. And it looks like the ABK merger with Xbox and the acquisition is going to happen. So all of that to say, I feel like a lot of folks in the Xbox camp are feeling really good about what this means for the space. A lot of folks on the Sony side in terms of their fan base are mad right now. They are hot. They are not feeling good about the way things are moving for them. But it was a really good moment this morning that happened. We're recording this on Sunday. You'll hear all of this Monday if you're listening to the audio version of the show. Phil Spencer jumped on Twitter and said, "We are pleased to announce that Microsoft and PlayStation have signed a binding agreement to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation following the acquisition of Activision and Blizzard. We look forward to a future where players globally will have more choice to play their favorite games." One of the conversations that bubbled up throughout that whole ABK versus the FTC and Xbox conversation was the fear that now Call of Duty was going to just go to one platform as an exclusive. Now, Phil, like he has said for the longest of times, has said, this is not a thing that we want to do. We want to make sure that this goes out to everybody and everybody has a chance to play. And now Sony has come to the table. In the words of our friends over at the Iron Lords podcast, they are saying that Jim Ryan has bent the knee and is now coalescing to what Xbox had wanted to see. I think, you know, the big TLDR, the big, you know, thing that we can pull away from this is, you know, as Stephen Totilo over at Axios has confirmed that this is a 10-year deal. So for the next decade, you'll be able to play Call of Duty on an Xbox device or a PlayStation device. And that is kind of the end result of all of this. It does feel like there was a lot of bluster that came about. And now we are just in a space where everything is actually just going to work and no one has to worry about it. You know, the FTC, like we talked about the last episode, didn't really make the case. And now all of those kind of chickens are coming home to roost with now PlayStation and Xbox getting in a room, figuring that out. And now for the next foreseeable future, for at least the next 10 years, this is going to be what happens for the rest of, you know, all the folks who want to play COD. You can play COD wherever you want now. So that's going to be really cool and really fantastic to be able to see. Again, I think this was in the cards for forever. I think the skeptics were really, really out there trying to figure out, is Phil Spencer lying? Is he actually telling the truth? And it looks like, again, Phil has been a man of his word. Xbox team have been people of their word. They have always said, at least from the conversation points that we have seen, that this is about everyone getting a chance to play. And this is about continuing to make it so that folks don't have to worry about changing platform to be able to play one of the biggest games on the planet. So that's a win for everyone. I don't know why kids in the Sony camp, I mean, in the PlayStation camp are mad now. There's conversations about them being like, we're boycotting now because we're not going to give Microsoft any money. Because if we play Call of Duty, we're giving them money. Again, fandom and fanboyism is stupid. Please don't be a fanboy because it doesn't give you anything but holes in your pocket and holes in your belly with an ulcer for dumb stuff. So don't do it. It makes no sense. It has no place here for any of the silliness to be able to go there. So news this week has been pretty light in terms of everything else. This has kind of been the biggest conversation. But what I do want to talk to you about is a game that I have been playing and I've been digging a ton. So let's go and talk about what we've been playing. So So the game that has been taking up a ton of my time of late has been Capcom's new game called Exoprimal. Exoprimal is a 5v5 game in which you are playing through these multiple layers of rounds while fighting dinosaurs in this kind of wave-based battle, while your team of five is fighting another team of five across the map that's doing the exact same thing. And what you're trying to do is get to the end route of that last battle, and whoever has completed their tasks first is the winner for that particular round. What makes this game really fun and interesting is that kind of one team is doing a thing faster than the other team, and that back and forth from this race of what teams are doing that quicker, which games are doing that in a more efficient way, and which ones are kind of beating the other ones in this kind of really interesting kind of asynchronous gameplay. I've been playing this. I played the beta. I was a person on the train for Exoprimal for a long period of time now already. I was talking about this. There's some videos on our YouTube channel that have talked about this and been really, really excited for it. Now getting a chance to play the full game in a retail game. This game is dope. And I really hope that it finds an audience, because I think there's a lot of legs for what this game can be, what this game potentially should be, and from a just like moment-to-moment gameplay perspective, there are very few games that are doing what this game is doing and doing it at a level that really does make you have to pay attention, have to play in a team, make sure that you're playing smartly, and also gives you the ability as a player to flex and do a lot of different kinds of tasks throughout a match and be good at all of those things. So I was playing yesterday. I've been playing kind of with the kind of more, you know, base character, the one that you would think of as the usual, like, assault class, has a machine gun, has a grenade launcher. You know, my team was made up of a tank, a healer, some other folks who do damage. And I have to say, the way that the battles kind of change throughout each one, this game has a lot of fun to be found in it, especially if you're super competitive. And I think one of the things that people are going to come to this game and find out is that, you know, yes, it is a little bit of Dino Crisis. Yes, it is a little bit of Anthem. Yes, it is a little bit of Lost Planet. It has all of that Capcom feel to it in a lot of different ways. But from a base perspective, it is super, super fun. And I think what makes it great is that if you're on the Xbox platform, you get to try this game out for free, air quotes free, if you're checking it out on Game Pass. I would say this is a game that if you're thinking about purchasing it, I would say wait a little bit, wait for it to go on sale, because I don't think it's going to be for everyone. But it is a game if you're on the Xbox PlayStation. I'm sorry, if you're on the Xbox platform, absolutely have no reason not to go check this game out. Go download it on Game Pass. Go check it out. Go play with some friends. Even if you don't have friends, and go play it with randoms. Most randoms are pretty competent in the way that they do it. I've been very frustrated with some people because they just don't understand what they're doing. But that's most games that I play. I'm frustrated with the way that people play, and I get mad at them, and I was like, what the hell are you doing? But from a moment-to-moment perspective, this game is fun. From a in-depth game perspective, it gets deeper the longer you play it. The story is okay. The story is all right. The Jamaican accent dude that's one of the characters that you have is one of the worst Jamaican accents, Caribbean accents, I've heard in a long time. I think video games don't get those right in the same ways they don't get black hair right. I've given it a little bit of grace to be able to be like, I'm not going to get that mad, but it's frustrating in the way that that winds up happening. But for all that being said, I'm having so much fun with this game right now. I am like, please, people, go and play this thing. I want people to really dig into it. The longer you play it, the more it throws wrinkles at you. In the beginning, it gets really repetitive because you kind of know exactly where you need to run from map to map to kind of go. And then it starts to change up the direction in which you're supposed to go and take a new challenge. Then it has this mechanic called the Dominator system, where you will get to basically control a huge dinosaur to be able to kill the other team or distract the other team. It winds up being this game in which all of these small, intricate details really do change the way that you play. And you can swap from class to class mid-match whenever you want to kind of change up the way that you deal with the tactics that you need to employ to make sure that your team is going to win. I'm having, again, a blast with this game. And I think if you go check it out, I think it's a thing to definitely go play. I think it's on my top of the list for games this year for fun experiences. I've been wanting to get better at it, and now I'm kind of, you know, experimenting with different classes and different types of gameplay. But I've gone from our team winning every round and being the fastest to finish a particular task to right at that end of game moment where you have to, you know, fight and do a PvP layer of the game, to going from being first to losing, and it'd be split seconds of decision-making processes of like, did a dinosaur kill you? Were you bumped off the map? Did you get healed in the proper way? Did you take out the right kind of dinosaur? Because you'll notice, you know, at the top of the UI, there's like certain numbers of certain kinds of dinosaurs that you have to kill in the moment for that round. Are you killing the right dinosaur? Are you doing that stuff? Have you upgraded your exosuit to be able to do things better? Like, there are so many different aspects to what this game is. Man, I just want people to play this thing and check it out. I think, you know, yes, I'm a Capcom insider, you know, I'm part of the Capcom creators squad. But this was a game that I was hyped for a long period of time. Like, this was a thing that I was just like really looking forward to. And now getting a chance to really dig into it, man, this game is good. So I would say, you know, if you have some time, go check this game out. Definitely go play it. You know, let me know what your thoughts are. I would love to maybe have a community night where we do some gaming around this, and we'll do it on the Xbox platform just to make it easy. It is cross-platform. You can play, I think it's cross-network. I think you might be able to play cross-network on this. I always forget if it's cross-play or cross-network. But yeah, you can play with a lot of different folks on a lot of different platforms, and it's really good. And you should definitely check it out and try it out. I think it is the thing that has been in my mind of the past couple of days, alongside some of the games that I'm playing that I can't talk about yet. But a lot of goodness in this title, I think you should check out. So please go play that bad boy, because it's a lot of fun. So we're going to end out this episode of Spawn On Me. Thank you, everybody who's come to the show and watched the live stream on youtube.com/SpawnOnMe. We'll be doing some gaming and on twitch.tv/SpawnOnMe sometime this week. I might go, you know, if I can get the edit and everything done in a reasonable amount of time, I might go stream either some Exo Primal or, you know, some Predecessor or something over there. So if you want to check out our gaming streams, make sure you go to check out twitch.tv/SpawnOnMe. But all of our, podcasts and videos that we're doing in that respect will be here on our YouTube channel. So please hit the notification bell. Please subscribe to the channel. Please share information out with other folks. We would love to hit 10K subscribers this year. It would be fantastic as a goal to be able to do so. We're also thinking about some crowdfunding options for the Spawnies this year, so that if you want to contribute to the Spawnies living for year 3, you'll have a way to monetarily help fund that. So stick around and get some. Stick around for more details about that coming very, very soon. And again, I think this was a fun time and a great conversation for us digging into the future of what the Xbox platform is going to wind up being, the goodness that we're seeing from Evo and the folks who are running that. The gaming space is in a really good spot right now, and I think we can give it some love in the best ways that we possibly can. It means a ton. So thank you to everybody who came and watched the live stream. Everybody's going to listen to the audio version and video versions over on Spotify and all the other podcast platforms in the world. We'll be back. I'm trying to figure out again what's a good proper day to actually do these streams consistently. It was extremely hot here in Portland this past week, so it was a little bit of a pain in the butt, and finally cooled down today. But we want to get more folks on the stream. We want to pull more people in who are watching us on Twitch, who are, you know, finding new people who are going to be checking out the show. Again, you can support the show true with super chats. You can do that as well. And again, we want to make the best show for you and give you the best possible podcast on the planet, because we've been doing it for a decade now. We want to make sure that you're getting the good love that you need. So until next week, make sure you're checking out us. Make sure you're checking us out on Twitter and Threads. You can check us out. You can get more notifications about when we go live, and we're going to go live there at Khalif Adams, at Spawn of Me on Twitter. It's Khalif on Threads is the name there. And yeah, we'll have more goodness and more video game conversation for you coming up very, very soon in a place near you not too long from now. So much love to you. Have a great rest of your weekend. Check out the show on Monday, when it goes up across the web. And we'll see y'all very, very soon. Much love. Wash your hands, wash your butt, and peace.